Well, I'm with Rod Hackney and Tia Kansara at the relaunch of a book about community architecture by Nick Waits and Charles Nevitt. We're in the ROBA having a few glasses, but it was great to meet up with Rod Hackney, who was doing a lot of this stuff back in the 1970s. So where did community architecture come from, Rod?
From the heart. From the ordinary people wanting to survive.
Gosh, you're showing me a picture of who's that of?
That's me. That's me knocking down my old toilets. Because the council said you can't have a grant for your inside toilet because you've got outside toilets. And we share those. 30 people share the toilets. So we thought we'd be revolutionary and knock the toilets down and then say we don't have any toilets. Now what are you going to do? And it worked.
It worked.
Yeah.
So where did that little story come from in 1971, I think?
Black Road.
And what happened after that?
I was asked by over 100 different communities to help them persuade their local authority to change their mind about demolition of their slums.
And how did you do that at the time?
We had an office in every area. We put in a team, and we it was a great time to be revolutionary because the government was very weak. Ted Heath was all over the place, the miners' strike, and that period between 71 and 74, Mrs. Thatcher was on the throne, was busy with the miners. It was a fantastic opportunity for community groups to get away with things that nowadays would perhaps be more difficult. That has changed the course of history in housing.
But it was really different times in the 1970s, wasn't it? That local authorities were doing stuff to people, not with people. Do you think things have changed a lot?
Totally. You can't do things to people anymore. Unless you take them to war, demand they fight. In urban planning now, you must ask the community to have a voice.
And Tia, what are you working on now?
Well, at the moment, I'm co-directing our firm, Kansara Hackney Limited. We're sustainability consultants. We move around the world, speaking about community architecture, sustainable cities. And at the moment, I'm completing my PhD at the Bartlett at UCL. And it's on Abu Dhabi's sustainability and looking at the city itself and analysing how you can make it much more people-friendly.
So who's receptive these days? Are you getting a better audience in the UK or elsewhere?
That's a really interesting question. I think at different times, different people are interested, primarily because of current affairs. So, for example, if you're talking about carbon neutrality or riots, different people are awakening to the idea of sustainability in those terms. So I think it's almost like a call of the time. There's a call of the time when it came to Lebanon. And we were just, Rod and I have been appointed the firm to complete Oscar Niemeyer's project in Tripoli in Lebanon. And that happened last year before he passed away. So we both of us got to meet him.
So what's the story you offer to people these days, Rob?
Because governments are very weak all over the world, the only place for imagination and energy is the people themselves. They're an army of endeavour. You've just got to get them going the right way. So it's very important in my and Tia's role that the architect lives and works in the community, not 9 to 5, and learns the ropes. Because most architects, there are schools of architecture that teach community architecture around the world, but not many. So they have to learn how people think and then tap that huge, latent energy resource that people have. It's the slums of today, there's still many around. There'll be 2 billion people living in slums in 2030, according to the UN. They are the energy that will sustain the slums. And slums are sustainable. Knocking down slums is not sustainable.
So although we started with community architecture, the lessons you're talking about are applicable to community development, organising, whatever.
War zones. We did a great scheme in Belfast. The scheme in Tripoli is in Lebanon. Similar stress between ethnic groups, religious groups. And we can use community architecture there as a peace tool. You know, when you're busy saving your own house, you're not going to destroy it after you've done it.
So, Tyr, is it useful to be called an architect? I don't know if you are calling yourself an architect now. What is the best kind of entry point for these sorts of conversations?
I'm not an architect, but that doesn't mean that I can't practice architecture with an architect in my firm. I'm an economist. And so when Rod and I first started working together, one of the first things that we looked at was where does economics of architect or the community come together? And that is where today we call sustainability. But actually, an entry point is the way that we're living right now. So, for example, lifestyle. The way that we're living, is it sustainable? We talk about, you know, sustainability of resources and resource management. And we're talking about all these different things that we're using inside our, you know, technological devices like the two that you're holding in front of me right now could only really be possible if we've got particular resources. And that is enhancing. I just returned from a data center conference today where we were talking about the speed at which data centers are growing, primarily because we're using so much data. You know, every time you download a Gangnam style song and you're dancing to it, it has a cost to it, both to, you know, the energy consumption or the CO2 equivalents of it or whatever it is. So actually the entry point of the work that we're doing is the way that we're living. And I think the more we understand the way that we're living and how that has an impact, the more we can understand the sort of the outlet for thinking a bit more abundantly, the fact that we do have resources around the world, that we do have resources like the people in the slums, like Rod mentions, that there are things that we can do that don't have to be negative. We don't have to put problems aside and say, well, that's just a problem and we have to throw this much money at it. That's not a solution.
So I guess you might say that although there are more disciplines involved now, Rod, do you think the principles are still the same? I'll get close to the people.
The biggest principle is you must remain generalist, not specialist. We don't have enough generalists around. You know, architects are getting smaller and smaller in their scope of works. They've got to get wider and wider. And a bit like the Médecins Sans Frontières that puts doctors into these communities, architects must go as well and live there. I know it's rough, but you know, you've got to make a role in the world for yourself.
Rod, what's the role of an architect today?
To have a vision and to be able to persuade people they've got the skill, if they unify and create an army of endeavour to achieve their own aims, which is better housing, satisfying the 5 criteria of the United Nations Habitat, a safe shelter, decent environment, water, right, space, and a shelter, right, either give you the sun, the rain, the snow, or the cold away. An architect's job is simply to do that, to be the enabler to allow them to achieve it. Hell of a lot of people. Charles Nevitt said, 7.1 billion people in the world. And as I said earlier, 2 billion in 2030 will be living in slums.